And welcome back to episode 121 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
So I'm hoping this is third time lucky. So once again, we've had a bit of an issue this evening with our recording platform. Now, I wouldn't normally call them out, but we use Zencastr, and typically speaking, it's pretty rock solid. But occasionally, there are some odd recording issues, which I really am unsure about. But just it's peculiar, isn't it, when it happens? It just doesn't appear that there's any sort of reason for it. We kind of just have dropouts. But anyway, that aside, we are back this week for the latest roundup of all the tech stories there are. Unsurprisingly, War Thunder is back. Yes, War Thunder, what we talked about only last week, we are back again with what I can describe as more crazy classified information. We're going to talk the T-Mobile breach. We're going to talk King Charles III would like Elon Musk's head on a platter. Okay, slight exaggeration, but you never know, he might do. Apple want to debate the meaning of the word shall. India has created a new homebrew OS for mobile. Trump is back. No, wait. He's not literally back as in the presidency, but he could be back. You know,
that's worrying.
Facebook or Instagram. I'm going to talk about Snow Crash, talk about M1 iPad Pro Gen 3, and the rumor mill is back for the iPhone 15 and the VR AR glasses. But more of that later on. So let's talk about War Thunder then, Carl, because we were only talking about this last week. And it's, you know, been what? Was it 3 days, 2 days since
the story broke? Yeah. So we have what? Ranch Source 39. It's basically, I know, awesome. So wanted to obviously one up the last guy who just sent some photos. He's upload the full flight manuals for the F-15 Eagle. Now he's arguing that only operational flight plans suite 4 or later academic workbooks got distribution statements issued on them. So any workbooks that you find at suite 3 should be fine. I'm not sure I'd like to bet my life and a prison sentence on the word should.
Well, considering Apple are going to argue the toss of what the word shall means, I wouldn't want to argue what should
it's mean. A bit of murky water, isn't it? Yeah. And especially as the manuals actually have some wording in it that says distribution authorized to the Department of Defense and US DoD contractors only, critical technology, and another one saying warning, this document contains technical data whose export is restricted by the Arms Export Control Act. Violation of these export laws are subject to severe criminal penalties.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be putting that up.
No. So let's just take a step back. So we were talking about obviously War Thunder being this, you know, massively multiplayer online war game that you can play. And as we were saying the other week, somebody posted information about the F-16, you know, the fighting falcon.
They did.
Now, 40-year-old aircraft, they were referring to the A model, which again, you know, has been surpassed. But technically, as you said, some of the details are in it, probably are not there for or have export regulations. So, you know, if you live in Iran, North Korea, or anywhere basically that the US doesn't want disseminated, you know, and, you know, this isn't the first time around because, as we were saying, you know, this has had what we've had the Challenger 2, we've had the French Leclerc main battle tank, we had Chinese weaponry, and now obviously the F-16 and now the F-15. So, I mean, this is starting to get pretty impressive, isn't it? You know,
There's a whole collection going on there, isn't there?
Well, so, I mean, we've got a whole collection. I mean, we've almost got some kind of military, license going, library. I mean, you know, library going on. You know, soon you won't need to go to the library. You'll just pull up War Thunder. I mean, this is getting ridiculous, isn't it? Absolutely ridiculous.
It is. I mean, I think even War Thunder are getting a bit annoyed at this one now. I mean, they had a community manager on whose name is Smin1080p. Anyway. So he's put out a comment saying, guys, I'm going to say this very clearly for everyone. If you cannot definitively prove something is legally publicly available, fully declassified, and without any restrictions, do not post it at all.
Yeah, because this could get very, very dicey for these guys, isn't it? Initially, the US is probably going to slap them down, legally speaking, but you really don't want the might of the US legal system and the DOD knocking on your door saying, okay,
no.
Why have you decided to host state secrets then? I mean, more worryingly, though, is the people that are doing it. That is it.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That's more the concern. But off the back of that story, we had a couple of days ago, isn't it, one of the military defense contractors, Raytheon, who make basically everything, military-wise, radars, weaponry, all kinds of systems. they were there was a rumor going around, wasn't there, on social media, that they were concerned about any of their employees that play War Thunder could be posing a national security risk because of the classified information. But they've now put a statement out, haven't they, saying actually, no, that's rubbish. You can play War Thunder, just don't post stuff, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know? We didn't say that. It won't affect your job. Just don't be stupid.
And I think one of their spokesmen or spokesperson, I should say, was quoted saying, though it's a great story, it's not true. And we haven't got a case where we have any concern with the game. Now, really, what I should say in brackets was, until somebody posts something about one of our
our products. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dear. I mean, I was very tempted the other day to reinstall War Thunder. I did play it for a little while, a couple of years
back. I used to play it. I played it in VR before I went to DCS and actually, you know what? It runs very smoothly in VR, unlike DCS.
I just found it was a hard grind if you didn't want to spend the cash. If you spend the cash, you know, you can level up very quickly. But I personally speaking, I had to... Flashcast, so grinding was quite
and I
hard,
didn't find it much of a simulation game, so it surprises me that having all these leaks to back up facts that, you know, maybe the missile doesn't quite work as it should do in real life. It's like, this isn't a simulation game, guys. I'd expect to see this maybe in a DCS forum, but clearly those guys are all adults and know better.
Yeah, you're right. Simulation is definitely not the word I would use on this at all. It's arcadey, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
But yeah, so I place your bets then. What's going to come out next week? I mean, we've had tanks, we've had aircraft. I'm waiting for ships or submarines. That's my bet.
Maybe they'll start taking requests. So what would you like to see?
Well, I mean, anything naval-wise. I mean, we've got a balance of playing field here a little bit, haven't we?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. So from War Thunder and National Secrets, let's go to another security issue then. This time it's T-Mobile. Again, I might add, this is not new, is it? This is the latest breach.
This is the second time in the last 2 years, and it's been, half a dozen times or more in the last 5 years?
Yeah, it has indeed. And T-Mobile have paid the price several times, haven't they, for these data leaks? So in 2015, they were fined a few million dollars. In 2021, they had over 500 million in $350 million in payouts, and another 150 million was put towards upgrading their security through this year. Clearly hasn't paid off, has it? So what
failed,
have we got now,
guys? so this time it's only 37 million people.
Fine, it's only fine.
And it's only their personal data from their accounts. It was accessed via, so somebody compromised one of their API endpoints, and I think used it to gain access to all the data. Now, T-Mobile are downplaying this stolen account information, basically adding that the data was basic and widely available in marketing databases. So you're still missing the point here. You were hacked and they took 37 million people's records. Whether it was freely available or not, you were still hacked.
I mean, talk about downplaying it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just... Is there a system? I wonder, and again, you know, I'm not pointing the finger at anybody, not making allegations, but you kind of have to question systemic failure in the security culture at T-Mobile, I wonder.
I think so. Because, come on, if they were being forced up their security, it's been 150 million this year. Was this year or was it last year? We're in 2023 now, but throughout the next year, have they spent it yet? If so, clearly they've spent it in the wrong places or just, got the wrong priorities there.
Absolutely bizarre. I mean API endpoints are a known security risk, aren't they? We know
they
all
are.
About that. You know, you and I both work in the security industry. You know, APIs unsecured are probably one of the most common areas where people are getting hacked or breached.
Easy to access, treasure trove of information you can pull from them.
Exactly. And it doesn't take many, you know, it doesn't take a well-seasoned security, you know, threat analyst or researcher to, you know, start to probe whether or not you have open APIs or you can, you know, they're not authenticated or how that works.
Yep.
And it doesn't, you know, and actually, to be fair, not to say it doesn't take skill, that's not what I meant, but it's not a complex, attack.
It's not a nation state hack on something, is it?
No. And, you know, for them to downplay it, to say that, you know, that data was basic, as you say, and, you know, it's that's not the point. That is definitely not the point. The point is that it shouldn't have been secured.
That's not going to fly in the EU, is it? Fly in the US, but in the EU, where we have a thing called GDPR, whether it was basic and widely available or not, you're going to get a big slap.
They are going to get a massive flat. So just to kind of take a step back then, and maybe I misunderstood, have they said where the data is? Is this, you know, T-Mobile in Europe? Are we saying, or is this US data? Have they actually disclosed, or has that been made available yet?
We've given very little information yet.
Well, there you go then. Definitely, you know, the EU data commissioner is going to be all over that. So GDPR is going to be, you know, first call upon. Obviously, here in the UK, you know, we have, the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office, with our version of GDPR now, isn't it? You know, the equivalent of. You're going to have, obviously, state-based in the US now, isn't it? Because you have things like the California Consumer Privacy Act. So the problem with that, though, I think, though, is because it's some of that data is public, that won't have the same teeth because it hasn't been stolen. But I don't think, as you say, here in Europe, that's not going to wash because GDPR...
It was a US statement. I found the actual statement on T-Mobile's website, and it's January 19th, 2023, Bellevue, Washington. But that's what they've done a statement from. Doesn't mean that this is not global data.
No, but, you know, I think, you know, if it comes out that the, you know, GDPR... Well, if somebody, I guess, you know, GDPR could come into play here, but I mean, it would need more data, it would need more analysis. But
yeah, of course,
I think it's just worrying again, isn't it? That and the same company, you know, again being breached and continually having the same problems, and they're not either they're not fixing it or they are, you know, I mean, now. I'm not going to stay here and state for the fact that it is a simple fix, snap your fingers, you can secure a company like T-Mobile. It is a massive surface area. There are multiple entry points into that organization. There are multiple systems that are exposed to the internet for various reasons. But you've got to start looking at how you secure these things, isn't it? Nobody's going to say a breach is, you know, not going to happen. You can't state that. Breaches will happen, but it's how far people can get, isn't it? And what data they can pull out of it. So that's kind of, I think, the viewpoint, isn't it, really?
And T-Mobile certainly know breaches can happen. As we said, there's 6 or 7 for the last 5 years. They're not a stranger to a security breach. And they've all been pretty large ones. So clearly they haven't learned their lessons along the way.
No, not at all. Very concerning, very concerning. But if any more comes out of this, we'll follow up on it on the show. All right, then. So as I said, yes, the King Charles III, you know, the head of the British royal family, is not very happy with Elon Musk. Well, more to the fact the Crown Estate isn't very happy with Twitter, is it? And in its UK subsidiary. So the Crown Estate, for anybody that's not sure, owns the portfolio property.
Well, looks after the property.
I couldn't get my words out of the right order that way. Yes, they look after the Crown's interest, don't they? Their property, and that includes some of the priciest real estate in the UK, wouldn't you say? In London,
definitely, including Twitter's HQ.
Yes,
well, London HQ, I should say.
It is, which is in Eyre Street, which is in central London near Piccadilly Circus. Quite a little posh area, isn't it? Tucked away behind. Piccadilly,
close to a very nice steakhouse.
It is indeed. We can't mention that on the show,
unless they'd like to sponsor us.
Yes. So Twitter have their UK headquarters there, which apparently, oddly, the branding, the Twitter logos, have all been removed from the building, haven't they? But people are still going there. So what's actually happened here? Are they breached
something? They've not paid, have they? So yeah. So apparently they signed a lease agreement for the third floor back in 2021 at $2.6 million a year. Although looking at the documents, the actual dispute seems to be for another floor in the same building that they also occupy. So I don't know how much they're paying for that one. But yeah, it seems that they've been failing to make payments on this. It's not the only place, is it? So they're also being sued for $3.16 million and damages for their San Francisco HQ, another $140,000 for another San Francisco office, and they were also kicked out of their Singapore office for failure to pay the rent. I don't get this. Since Musk came in and he forced everyone back into the office, didn't he? They could work remotely. If you want to work remotely, basically, you no longer had a job. You had to sign it by midnight to say that you'd be in the office. So he's got to be back in the office, and he's not paying the rent on the offices?
Well, I'm not sure.
The plan doesn't make sense to me.
No, the plan doesn't make sense. There is no logic to this. The only logic is that he is driving Twitter into the ground and, you know, carry on as quick as you can. But surely if you want people back in the offices, you need to pay
the actual offices for them to go to.
Exactly.
Though I had heard, I'm not sure which offices, he's now said to people in two offices he's closing down can now work remotely.
Well, yeah, because if you haven't got an office to go to, where are you going to work?
Well, no, and I presume he's realised how expensive these offices are, and it might be cheaper to let people work at home.
Oh, hang on a minute,
especially
though.
At 2.6 million a year.
But if you don't, but if you work at home, you remember you're not productive according to him, are you? You're not.
Yeah, you're not hardcore.
You're not hardcore, are you at all? You know, and you're not doing the Elon Musk, you know, super duper coding and developing. You know, I'm just making this stuff up because he does. I mean,
yeah, it's just a very bizarre one.
It is a very bizarre thing, you know, given that, you know, they were hemorrhaging money anyway, but the company was at least working. There was not, I did see on that story from the Register, there was the other week, they had an auction at Twitter of surplus corporate assets, including, what was it, a neon bird logo. The other one that made me laugh? Oh, that was it. A kegerator, beer dispenser, amongst other things, including chairs and table. I mean, how are they surplus? I mean, is that because when they turned it into a hotel, they don't need chairs and tables in there?
Was it 107 boxes of N95 masks, a Yamaha digital mixing console, a 68 8-port Belkin power strips still in a box. Oh, yeah, that was the one. The kegerator beer dispenser.
The only logical thought here is that basically he wants to destroy Twitter, and this is the fastest way to do it by having everything just fail on him. But the problem, surely, though, he's going to end up in court in multiple suits now. You know, he's got several. Yeah. There are several suits being put to him around the redundancies, wasn't it, laying people off because of the way that he did that, and that's not just in the US. That's here in the UK as well, isn't it, and in Europe.
Yep, I imagine that's all over the world.
You know, they're being sued for breach of contract for these rent, you know, agreements. I don't get it. What is next? What next?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's anyone's guess at this point. It's there's no plan, is there?
There is no
just
plan.
Doing this as he goes along, it's too random.
It is too random, and I also. He said, Dan, remember the thing he said, the poll, I'll step down. And then basically everybody said yes. And then his review to that was, well, then I can find somebody. Was it stupid enough or words to that effect, wasn't it?
That yeah, something like that, stupid enough to take it on. So that'll be no one at this point.
No, but actually he needs somebody who can run a business because, you know, clearly, as we've said before, the guy is a smart man. I'm not going to say genius, but he's a smart man, right? You don't get to be that rich by any
seems
means.
Impulsive though,
exceptionally impulsive, but at the same time you've got him, you know, with you've got SpaceX, you've got OpenAI.
But he didn't build SpaceX Tesla. From the ground, he didn't do this that with Tesla either. These are companies he bought.
Well, yeah, my point being is he's also the head of those organizations and running them as well.
There are teams within those companies that are dedicated just to occupying Elon Musk and keeping away from actually running the business. Whether that's made up or not, I've heard those rumors, and I'm like, it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, clearly Twitter hasn't got one yet. No, there you go, guys, a new department needs to be created, the Elon Musk attention diversion department. Oh dear. Okay, well, let's talk about Apple then. So Apple this week, yep. have decided to debate the meaning of a single word, and this word is the word shall. And this is regarding an antitrust case that's happening in the UK at the moment. And this is all comes down to the legal difference. They tried to debate the legal
difference. It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
A study and an investigation. And now the legal meaning of the word shall. And this is all around two App Store policies, isn't it, that have been declared.
Yep.
So what is the meaning of the word shall? Do we know?
No, I don't know. So I had this feeling the CMA may be taking on too much and making some mistakes. Because to bring this one back, this started in June last year, where the CMA did the antitrust against Apple about the two App Store policies. It was about blocking cloud gaming, so xCloud, and the forcing people to use WebKit in their browsers. Okay. So yeah, they started this. Should have been called an investigation, wasn't it, last June? But they called it a study. And Apple called them out on this. Said, look, only an by your own laws, only an investigation gives you the legal power to impose sanctions. A study does not. So the CMA had to begrudgingly acknowledge that one and restart it again, okay? Which takes us to today, where Apple is now arguing that the CMA have missed its own deadline to impose these sanctions. And Apple says, again, the law states that the CMA should have declared that its decisions to open an investigation on the same day it published the results of the initial study. Now, the CMA is saying the law gives it the option to do so, but not the legal requirement. And say the law itself, the CMA, shall do so. And that's what we're coming down to, the shall. Is that they have to, or is that an option to do so? And that's what they're now arguing over in court.
Yes, and Apple, of course, as you say, Apple insisting that this, you know, they is a must, isn't it? Rather, you know, rather than the option. That Apple's view is that you need to do this because you haven't done it, therefore this is a null and void.
Null and void again. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and Apple, let's be honest, are not going to tell. They're not lying down, are they? They are.
No, they're not taking this one. And I do laugh at the CMA's first one that they mucked up our own laws. I went, a study instead of an investigation. Ouch. That must have hurt the first time.
But interestingly, though, apparently Shell has a bit of a. This isn't the first time this has ever happened, is it? It's happened quite a lot of time. What was it? I think it was one of the statements from the, was it a particular legal website? Says that there are over 100 pages in the Encyclopedia of Words and Phrases devoted to a summary of more than 1,300 precedents from common law jurisdictions interpreting shall. I think you're about to add one more to that then. So the legal appeal is meant to, when's the legal appeal? Was on the 24th, wasn't it? But we're not sure how long it's going to carry on before they hear. But yeah, amusing. I mean, Apple, fair play. Apple are going to take this all the way to the wire because, you know, you're right. They're going to prove, or they're going to want to prove, definitely, aren't they, that the CMA has caused themselves a complete failure here. You haven't done it. And, you know, chalk another one up to us and move on. But I do think you're right. I think, you know, personally speaking, I think the CMA probably are taking on too much. I mean, how many, you know, they're taking up, we've got Apple, we've got, we had them with the ARM situation, didn't we? Yep. You know, with NVIDIA. You know, they are, you know, we've got VMware.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. And VMware as well, I think, also is probably going to go, I don't know. I was reading something the other day that says that, you know, the CMA are very unhappy with the Broadcom acquisition of VMware. And I think, you know, that's definitely going to get contested. But that was supposed to have completed, wasn't it, by this point now, or at least be on the verge of completing.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on there. Well, no. If we hear anything more about the Apple stuff, we shall let you know.
All right, then. Give us something different. What have we got now? Completely different.
So India. So this was last week. The Indian government stated that the nation should create its own mobile OS to challenge the dominance of Google and Apple. Then all of a sudden this week, the Minister for Education and the Skills Development and Entrepreneurship, Dharmendra Prada, basically he's demonstrated an OS and endorsed it as the sort of thing India should be doing. Now this OS is called Bhar OS, Bhar OS. So yeah, it was
Is that a silent B, perhaps?
I don't know. No, but it wasn't. It was apparently publicly announced by the Indian Institute of Technology in Madras. It ships bare bone with no preloaded apps. Doesn't share any data. It only works for private app stores. I'm not sure how that's going to scale. I don't know. But strangely, this is an odd one. One of these. I think flippant statements that Pradham has said is he's claimed the OS is incapable of running malware, but didn't provide any explanation of how it's incapable of running well. I'm sure if it's capable of running code, it's capable of running malware. But
I mean, look, I have a lot of respect for the Indian IT industry because, you know, the Indian IT industry practically runs the world, doesn't it? Let's be honest.
Oh, massively.
And I do not mean that in jest. I mean that in absolute sincerity. You know, look at nearly all of the major tech companies, you know, to this day, and, you know, have Indian CEOs. You know, some of the largest service providers are Indian-based companies. You know, there's a fantastic wealth of talent. But to come out with statements like it can't run malware, words to that effect, I mean, realistically, what planet are you living on?
He's a minister, though, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. He's a politician, so he doesn't know much about actual technology, I imagine.
Isn't it the Minister for Cybersecurity or worse, something similar in Japan who's never used a computer, isn't it?
That's the one, yeah. So, but have you seen the screenshots?
I did see a couple of screenshots, and I was slightly puzzled by what the hell it was.
Well, quite a few of it looks very similar to Android.
I wonder now, what's running
it does. It runs the Linux kernel, but so does Android. Now, I'm not saying this is Android AOSP, but it could be Android AOSP.
Well, look, we don't have a copy of it here. I'm sure it won't be hard to get a copy of it.
No. But apparently this is actually being used. Their website states the OS is currently being provided to organizations that have stringent security and privacy requirements. So apparently this is out there in the wild being used by someone.
Yeah, but it's only been live for 5 days according to the actual launch date, isn't it? So
that's why I said publicly announced.
Yeah, so one of the things I read earlier was around saying that BarOS, because it can run most apps, it is probably based on OS Android Open Source Project. There's a very good chance that it is, right? And there was also a statement in the Indian Express which said it appeared to be a forked version of Android as well.
It would not surprise me in the slightest.
But of course, you're not going to say that, are you? Because part of the reason for this is that Google is under investigation by the Commission of India for a lot of basically similar antitrust behavior around Android. So, and the cost around, you know, the App Store and so, where have we heard that before? You know, so that, you know, they're saying that this is aimed at the 1 billion or so mobile phone users in India. I'm not entirely sure that's going to quite work because I'm pretty sure a lot of them probably are using iPhones as well. I mean, Android's going to have the bulk of it, but there are probably going to be iOS users out there. But it doesn't look, I mean, I know what you're saying, yes, it's Linux underneath, but it does look Android, doesn't it? You know?
Android is built on Linux kernel.
Yeah. Very, very peculiar. I'm interested to see where it goes, but, you know, and look, we've said this before, I think, you know, a while ago around, you know, competition to the Android OS, Google, obviously, and iOS. But the problem is, you are now where, how do you differentiate between them when nearly all of the other OSs that are in the wild are forked versions of Android now, aren't they? Because that is basically the only way to get apps. Unless you're going to have a whole ecosystem of app developers building apps for a completely different ecosystem, it's not going to work, is it?
It's what killed the third competitor. You know, Microsoft's Windows Phone, the new iteration, was actually a pretty decent OS, but it was killed by lack of apps.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not going to work. But yeah. I mean, India's got you know, bulk behind it in terms of people that could have the OS on their phones. But I mean, I did read, though, it just made me chuckle about something. Did you see the statement around so the startup that, you know, the creator, was it Jandakar or JNK Operations? It basically said that it offers native over-the-air updates that help to keep the devices secure. So NOTA updates are automatically downloaded and installed on the device without the need for the user to manually initiate the process.
Right, yeah.
So that means that the device is always running the latest version, which includes the latest security patches and bugs. And then it goes on to say about that with NDA, PASS, and NOTA, India mobile phones are trustworthy. Okay, so that doesn't take into any account then that you might have a break-fix situation where you're just going to push updates down and kill apps off. Lovely, yeah. I love it. There's no concept of the real world there, is there? I don't feel. It's very odd, very odd.
No, it's a PR stunt, isn't it?
Yeah, it must be. But talking of PR stunts then, So Meta have unbanned former president, former President Trump, and he is now allowed to go back onto Facebook and Instagram, which is now, it's got to be 2 years since he was initially suspended. So they said that last Wednesday, they said that they're going to reinstate his accounts in the next few weeks. And if he breaks their content policies, then he'll be suspended again from 1 month to 2 years, depending on the severity of violation. And that was a quote from Meta themselves. I mean, I get it. I suppose, you know, you've served a time, let him back. But given the fact he could have come back to Twitter, and I don't believe he has he?
No, I don't know if he has. No, no.
So he's trying to pump, don't forget, he's trying to pump the value into his, you know, was it the Truth Social platform that he uses, you know, the Mastodon fork. I don't see him going back to Facebook and Instagram quickly unless he does decide to run for the presidency.
Yeah, if he runs for presidency, he'll be on there because there are many more people that will see it.
Yeah, I think he'll want to leverage that. However, you know, I think this is more of a, not a publicity stunt by Meta, but it'll be interesting to see what publicity Trump wants to play out of this. You know, Meta themselves have said that, you know, these new guardrails they put in place to deter repeat offences. Yeah, but are they really going to do it? I mean, I'll be honest with you, the fact they banned it for 2 years, I take my hat off to them for that, because I thought they, I thought they'd, you know, they'd bow down. But Trump did, I think Trump did make an announcement on this on Truth Social, which was, here it is. Facebook in capitals, which has lost billions of dollars in value since deplatforming your favorite president. Okay. And then comma, me has just announced they're reinstating my account. And then he puts him back in. Then in the classic, you know, Trump style of capitals, thank you to Truth Social for doing such an incredible job. Yeah, so that pretty much explains it. He ain't coming back unless he needs to, is he? You know?
No, exactly.
But I don't know. He's still, you know, there's still talk about him running for the 2024 election, isn't there?
I know. But did you
see that there was a petition by his re-election campaign to Meta to unlock the accounts?
Oh no, I did not see that one.
Yeah. So the Trump's 2024 re-election campaign wrote to Meta to say that his ban basically had dramatically distorted and inhibited the public discourse, which was sent in a letter to Meta last week. But two lawmakers who are Democrats, unsurprisingly, have urged Meta to continue with his ban, and they wrote to Meta in December. Clearly, that's fallen on deaf ears. And they said that they were quoted as saying, for Meta to credibly maintain a legitimate election integrity policy, it's essential you maintain its platform ban on former President Trump. But I guess for their point of view, as in Meta, that is, he served the time. You know, if he comes back, he comes back. If not, we'll slap him down and off he goes, isn't it? But yeah, I don't think he's going to do it unless he needs to be unless he goes full re-election, which at the moment that's not official, is it? So until that happens, I think, he'll continue to use the Truth Social. And you know what? He can stay there, in my opinion. But there you go.
Yeah, I've heard not a lot from him, which is just great.
It is. Okay, right. Let's talk about some information. So have you heard of Snow Crash?
No, I hadn't. You mentioned it the other week, and it was the first I'd ever heard of it.
So I cannot believe I've not heard of this book. So Snow Crash is a science fiction novel written by Neal Stephenson back in 1992. And it is pretty much a how do you kind of say precursor or kind of, you know, crystal ball into a lot of the technologies we use today. Now you can say, is this life imitating art? Is this inspiration? Who knows? But this book pretty much envisaged the metaverse, and this also was the first documented use of the word the metaverse. And it follows a hero protagonist, know who he is then, who is a hacker and a delivery driver for the mafia. And he does his jobs and he goes into the metaverse using his, you know, basically what looks like an Oculus Rift. So this book pretty much has all of these things that, you know, talk about going to the metaverse, talking about using AI, there's DNA editing. But what it kind of spawned and became a kind of, I don't know, almost a Bible in Silicon Valley. And I heard this on a podcast the other day, and I couldn't believe I'd heard of it. And it pretty much also brought the word avatar. Now, I would should say avatar had been used in the 1986 book or thing. And yep. Avatar, I don't know if you know, is a Sanskrit term. So, but Snow Crash popularized it, a bit like Apple with them, you know. Avatar was popularized by this book. It also basically talked about Wikipedia. There was in the book, there's a thing called the Central Intelligence Corporation, which is a merger of the Library of Congress and the CIA. And they have a wiki-like knowledge base called the Library. There's also Google Earth. There's a Google Earth, and it talks about effectively what is Google Earth, but it's not, you know, internet. What else was in there? Yeah, so Oculus Rift pretty much was heavily influenced by this. So the metaverse, Second Life, remember that? Actively, actively inspired by this. And there was a, I didn't realize this, I remember I sent you this, but former CTO of Microsoft, Jay Allard, and he also, one of the Xbox Live managers, said that they were heavily inspired by Snow Crash for the development of Xbox Live, and it became a mandatory read for the development team. So this book, like I say, talks about going into the metaverse and, you know, kind of going into the headphones and the, you know, putting the headphones on, and it's a wraparound, and it has, like, you know, Oculus style over the ear things, and you go in and it's like that. Now you're thinking, does this sound like something else? Well, it probably sounds like Ready Player One.
Yes, I do like that film and the book.
Ready Player One was heavily influenced by this.
Ah, okay.
So this came before Ready Player One, and there are massive similarities between them. It, you know, Ready Player One is its own story. Mm. And also, interestingly, Ready Player One actually was also kind of, you know, I believe, as I read today, was also, again, a... what's it? Not required reading, but again, you know, you know,
recommended.
Recommended. Yeah. But of course, in Meta, Facebook and Oculus and that. But the thing, Ready Player One, though, Ready Player One, don't forget, who is the enemy in Ready Player One? It's the corporation, isn't it?
It
is the corporation, which is kind of, but they were kind of saying, you know, they were trying to, they were kind of not looking at that. They were looking at more around what it was talking about. It was what you were able to do, you know, to go and be.
Yeah.
So I came across, as I say, in a podcast I had the other day. And I was like, I've got to read this. And I've now got a copy of it. Not a 1992 copy, because they are like
vintage.
Rocking Horse dropping money, by the way. They are like big, you know, you're talking hundreds for a copy.
Wow.
Back in 92, yeah. But apparently there was a point, you know, in Silicon Valley, you know, a lot of the early company startups, they jokingly would say they wouldn't trust other engineers who hadn't read Snow Crash. It was kind of like, if you didn't know about it, yeah, you know, we were like, yeah. And also there was one other thing, there was Quake, by the way, was inspired by Snow Crash as well. Nuts, you know, kind of thing. So once I've read it, I'm going to come back and tell a bit more about it. But I'm sure a lot of people listening to this be like, yeah, I know what this is. How did you not know about it? And I'll be honest with you, I am shocked how I didn't know about this at all. So, yeah.
I might have to add that to my reading list.
I think you should. Yeah, I think it's definitely worth it. So, yeah, a new find. And I thought we should share that with the listeners.
Nice. So what did you purchase just recently?
So, yeah, so this week I have, well, the last week I have purchased a Gen 3 iPad Pro. So the 11-inch 2021 M1 powered model. So what I did was I sold my 2018 Gen 2. It was Gen 2, wasn't it?
Yeah, Gen 2.
Gen 2. 12.
I have the Gen
9,
1.
12.9-inch one, which had the Folio keyboard. And it had been, you know, a staple of my daily life, you know, travel around the world with it. It's a fantastic device, but I was finding it quite bulky. I've gone back to trying taking digital notes, you know, and I've been, you know, looking at things like the Kindle Scribe and the Onyx Book, I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
And I was kind of tossing and turning about whether to go with an e-ink device for note taking, or, you know, kind of think, you know, do I go, you know, new iPad and go back down to an 11 inch? And the M2 iPad had just come out, you know, I was kind of looking at that, but, you know, it just seemed a bit of an overkill. Yes, so I went for an M1 powered 11-inch. So this is the 2021 model, as I said. in silver, you know, not that makes much difference these yep. days. And it doesn't have the XDR retina display. It has the liquid retina display, but not the higher end model, is it? But yeah. It is a powerful little device. You know, it's got 8 gig of RAM. It's got 256 storage. As I said, it's got the M1 chip, so that's an 8-core CPU with 4 performance, 4 efficiency, and the 8-core GPU. You know, if I'd gone for a 1 terabyte model, that'd have got me 16 gig of RAM, which is coming as nuts, isn't it, for a tablet? But it's got, you know, it's got nice cameras on it. It does, you know, it's got the pro camera system from the phone of that year. So it's got the wide and ultra wide cameras. It supports the center stage for FaceTime.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah. And obviously it's good. Now, it is, without a case on it, it weighs nothing. I know that sounds a bit daft, but it really does. It feels absolutely weightless compared to the 12.9 inch. I was shocked how light it was. The official weight for it was 466 grams.
Right.
Oh, tell a lie. I've got the cellular model. That's it. I got it off eBay secondhand. I got the cellular model and it's 470 grams. And there's still nothing to it, really, is there?
No.
So I decided to pair it with the new Magic Keyboard, you know, the one with the trackpad.
How much does that weigh?
That weighs more than the iPad.
Right, so it's a chunky boy then, yeah?
So it weighs more than the iPad, but I know I'm late to the party on this, but the mouse is a game changer. It really is.
The trackpad,
is.
Yeah.
I mean, because obviously I drive a MacBook Pro normally when I'm, you know, not at home, the muscle memory is there. And now when I'm in, like, you know, yeah, I can swap to that and the muscle memory is there. And because the keyboard, like, you know, with the Folio keyboard on the 12.9 inch, you know, you've got all the same, you know, key presses, shortcuts. I have to say, by the way, the travel on the keys on the Magic Keyboard as proper Lovely. Travel. Yeah, it's like a mini chiclet keyboard. Beautiful, really typing. What I've discovered is this is the perfect iPad size. The 12.9 is great. If I didn't have a MacBook, the 12.9 is a perfect laptop replacement. Yeah. And I've come to that conclusion after having both now. The 11 inch is that middle ground when you don't need to take your laptop somewhere, but you still need yeah. to do some of those standard tasks.
More than your phone.
Yeah, exactly. And I used it in a meeting the other day. Now, the downside is, unlike the Folio keyboard, you can't fold the keys up over the back of the iPad nope. and use the pencil with it. So when I want to take notes, I've got to take it, unclick it out of the keypad, the keyboard, and rest it on the top. Minor annoyance, right. but you know, I can live with it. I am really impressed by it. Now, you know, it's also got Wi-Fi 6, so it was much quicker downloading the backups, by the way, I should say, than the other one. It is, you know, I've got the LTE chip in there. I haven't used it yet, yep. but I may do on that if I can find myself a cheap data plan. I have to say, Apple just, you know, there is something magical about an iPad when you think about tablets. I'm not going all fanboy and saying how great iOS is. I just mean from the usage, the actual form factor of it, they work. And that M1 SoC is just so powerful. It really is really powerful.
Seems crazy still to have that in an iPad.
Yeah. You know, the M2, I think, is still overkill as well. I think the M1 probably is overkill. I mean, given that the Gen 2 had the A12Z chip in it, yeah?
Which it did, yeah.
Pretty much, apart from the RAM, because that had 6 gig of RAM.
Yeah.
But it wasn't far off, was it, the M1 chip in kind of capability? No. But the M1 just takes it to another level. There are some things in that you can. Now, I haven't tried anything too strenuous on it yet, but, you know, it video playback is great. One thing I will say is, though, the M1 chip is killing the battery. Now, I thought, I was worried, had I bought a duff iPad? No, I haven't. You go on, you read the forums, you read Reddit, you go else in.
Yeah.
The M1 suffers with the battery. It really does.
Right, okay.
You know, I would say Apple would probably disagree with us and say, you know, you're talking out your rear end because, you know, they say there's up to 10 hours of surfing the web or watching video. I would say right. you're probably right. But if you're doing other tasks on that as well, that drops massively.
Yeah.
It really does.
For your usage patterns, you're not getting as good a battery life as what you did with the old one.
No, but again, it probably had a bigger battery, didn't it?
Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, 12 did.
Yeah, the only good thing about it, obviously being the M1, is that it can support single display up to 6K.
Right.
Because it's a Thunderbolt 4 USB 4, so it's got charging, display port, Thunderbolt 3 up to 40 gig, USB nice. 4 up to 40 gig, and USB 3.1 up to 10 gig transfer. Now, you and I both know reality that's not going to happen, but data transfer is quick. Oh, the other, by the way, you probably are aware, but the other thing with Folio keypad is that there is a pass-through charging point behind the keyboard. So you can plug that in and charge it whilst keeping the iPad USB port free.
Nice.
So that's quite helpful. So if you're plugging it into a display or something else, it's quite a good way to do it. So yeah. So early days, I'm really impressed. I have to say, form factor is brilliant. I want to find some ways to strain it a bit more. I need to do that. But yeah,
are you going
to
take it to the office and use it for the day, plugged into the monitors?
Do you know what? I was thinking about this the other day. I'm really tempted to do that on a day when I haven't got much on, and see where we go. You know, it supports, you know, basically I can do all of 99% of my job I can do on that iPad. Is it going to be practical to do it on the iPad? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't care what Apple say. That display in Safari or Chrome, you know, desktop mode for some browsers, they still does not work, does it? Because some applications, some websites still think it's a mobile device. But yeah, I am tempted to do it. I think maybe on a quiet day, I am very tempted to do it. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, I think, you know, it's it proved well. Like, you know, I'm not going to go into specifics, but I got a good price on my iPad. You know, a typical iPad or iDevice depreciation. But I also got a very good bargain on this one, didn't I, on eBay?
You did, yeah.
You know, so all in all, it has worked out well in that sense. It's cost me a lot less than a new iPad, massively less than a new iPad. But yeah, very bargain. Very impressed by it. Yeah, very much so. Very pleased. 11-inch is the way forward in my book. Right then, I think it's time for the TechRant rumor mill. What have we got this week then?
Well, I say it's that time of the year. Your iPhone 14 Pro Max, they're now rubbish, and you can look forward to a 15 Pro. So we've had some more leaks, haven't we? So and this time it's about the bezel and the fact it's going to be curved. So it's on the Pro models only. It's going to have smaller bezels and it'll be curved, quite like the way the Apple Watch looks, where the screen kind of disappears in it around the curve.
Like a smooth edge then, yeah.
Smooth. Now, we've had curved sides before, haven't we?
Have we? Which one?
iPhone 10? 10R? That was curved, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the XR were curved, weren't they? I think they were slightly...
They were, which was quite nice. It was certainly a lot nicer to hold than the current sharp edges. That's not the only thing. We're also hearing that the non-pros will be getting Dynamic Island. It's not a huge surprise. But also, we saw a tweet the other day. I pinged you, didn't I? Which has made us possibly reconsider the two-year gap between phones. But just kind of listing all the stuff that the new Pro models will be getting that the non won't. We're looking at, obviously, the A17 chip. So I imagine that the non-pros will now get the A16s from the current pros. We're getting Wi-Fi 6E. We're obviously getting a higher speed USB-C port. And I think we've talked about this one before, that the non-pros will have USB-C, but it'll be at USB 2 speeds rather than the USB 3 speeds.
Which I still think is ridiculous, you've got to say.
Artificial segmentation there. We're getting the titanium frame. Obviously, those thinner bezels and that kind of curved bezel there. Apparently, we get an increase to 8 gig of RAM on the Pro phones. Those solid state buttons with the taptic feedback.
Ooh, nice.
I know, and at least 6x optical zoom using the Periscope. That's the one, using the Periscope. But apparently, that's on the Pro Max only.
It is frustrating because, you know, you and I were taking, you know, we had that because of COVID, didn't we? We decided to wait and skip the 13 and went straight to the 14 for a kind of better experience, which was good. I have to say, it was a very good move, I feel, on our part, wasn't it, to do that. And I was thinking the same, you know, with this, I'll do a 2-year cycle. It'd be nice. I'll have a nice, you know, I can do what I want with the phone. But yeah, it's a 15. It does sound like they're going all in with the 15 this time around, doesn't it? It really does.
I mean,
early rumours, of course, early rumours, you know, let's be clear. But I was just going to say, on the other hand, though, a lot of the rumours typically tend to be true these days.
Yes, but there's still something to change. But I think if all of those came through to, I'm not worried about the A17 chip. The 16 is plenty quick enough. Wi-Fi 6E, yeah. You know, great if it's there, but is it actually going to use six gigahertz, or is it going to be Wi-Fi 6E still in the 5 gigahertz band? If it's still using 5 gigahertz, what's the point? Yes, USB-C would be great to have, definitely. One cable that rules them all. So I'm up for that one. Titanium and new thinner bezels, curved, a different design from the current, same old design we've had for the last 3-4 years?
Yeah, this is it.
I would like a new design. Yeah, I'm definitely up for that one. 8 gig of RAM, you can't have enough RAM, can you, really? So that's great. I'm still not sure about the solid state buttons.
No, I'm not. But, you know, I guess everything has to change.
I do like a nice raised button. When my phone is in my pocket, I know where the volume buttons are, the power button. I can feel that, the mute. I can't do that with solid state buttons.
No, you can't. You're right about that. You can't. I just, it has to change. Yeah, like I say, I think I'm with you. A17 chip, let's be honest, nothing's going to change. The 16, yeah. You know, we're into a point now where CPU power is incremental, isn't it? It's everything else you want on there.
I mean, if the A17 brings massive boosts in battery life, I'm all for that.
Well, that's a completely different
thing.
I
don't need any more performance at the moment.
Because, and also the 8 gig RAM, you're right, I'm with you. But again, what are we doing? The other thing about the USB port and the data transfer speeds, again, though, yep, puzzles me, because whilst obviously, on one hand, I'm saying the non-pro is, well, that's stupidly slow. Why would you do that? On the other hand, you're like, who's transferring data off their phones on a USB port now, you know?
But mind you, if you are recording in raw footage.
Yes, that's probably the only. Okay, raw.
Those are some huge files. But how many people are doing that?
No, that's probably the one area that you would do it. And I think we mentioned that before, didn't we, when the initial rumor came out about it. But yeah, look, I'm intrigued.
I want the 6 optical zoom.
Yes, because I think, you know, I've complained about this now. I'm in the view that the cameras need improving. Definitely need improving on the iPhones.
Maybe slightly less on the old AI optimization. But yeah, a 6x optical would be fantastic.
Be really fantastic. But yeah. Awesome. So we'll see where this goes. You know, early days yet. We haven't even got to dub yet to see where that goes. But yeah.
Well, yeah.
Interesting. All right. So what else have we got in the tank this week then?
So next we have some more nuggets on the Reality Pro headset. I think it's just an amalgamation of other bits we've heard, but they're obviously going on to say that we're going to get several external cameras now. I know we'd heard about that when they redesigned, didn't we? Got too expensive, they put too many cameras on. But these cameras are going to be used to analyze users' hands, as well as sensors within the gadgets housing to read eyes. This rumor about a digital crown is still there. I think it's weird, but there's going to be a digital crown like you get on your watch for switching between AR and VR. So you twiddle it to switch between. If you're in VR, you hit the AR, the VR world disappears, fades to the background. You're just left with your apps within AR. Okay. We've heard this one about the external battery, but it's been reiterated that this battery will be something you stick in your pocket or attach to your belt. Only going to get 2 hours battery life out of it, though. But I suppose as these are external batteries that connect with cables, you can just hot plug another one. Which quite possibly might make sense if you're going to be using this for more than 2 hours.
Yeah, do you know what? This battery pack thing still is just, to me, it just sounds crazy. It doesn't sound like an Apple product. It sounds like Johnny Ive is probably spitting feathers somewhere.
yeah,
over
I think
this,
so.
You know, because this is not the kind of slick Apple design, is it, that you would expect?
No.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of grunt in this headset, supposedly, isn't it? They've got a power.
Yeah, well, if it's running an M1 or an M2 chip, again, like you said with your iPad, the battery doesn't last as long. And if you're doing full AR, VR processing, that's going to be heavy on the GPU.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, this is definitely getting, this is getting closer. My view is, I would be surprised if we don't see this until Dub Dub. I think this could be a Dub Dub keynote.
There were two other bits. one which sound quite good, you'll be able to, it will serve as an external display for your Macs. So using the AR, if you're working on your laptop, you'll be able to generate extra monitors. So obviously you won't need the bandwidth on your PCI Express chips for that because they'll be virtual. So they'll use those and you'll still be able to type and use your touchpad or external peripherals because you'll be in AR, but you'll have these extra displays beamed out in front of you wherever you want them to, well, work as extra displays.
Interesting. I've always wondered about that VR and, like you say, having, you know, external displays and seeing, like, you know, 50-inch screen in front of my eyes.
But you need AR for that because you still need to see your hands. You still need to, a virtual keyboard to type on in VR isn't very productive.
No, not at all.
So if you're in AR with these high-res cameras and you can still just see your keyboard, your mouse, your touchpad like it is in real life, but still get your screens laid over, I think that'd be quite good, quite productive. And the last one, I think, is playing into these cameras again. So apparently, when you use FaceTime on the headset, you'll get realistic renders of the user's face and full body in the virtual reality. So I'm guessing it's using the cameras within it, checking your eyes to also copy your face into VR, and then the ones imagine on the externally to video stream your body.
Yeah, I think you're right there, isn't it? That's probably the only way to
also
do it.
And these cameras are going to be facing down. So is this working the same way as, what's the thing where you can stick the iPhone on your screen
but have it facing? Continuity camera.
But you can get it to look at the one below, can't you? Down as well as up, and it does some kind of rebending of the image to make it look real. I'm guessing it's using some similar technology for the body part.
Yeah, so continuity camera. And I've got it on here. And I've had the phone in the stand and then all of a sudden you're like, what? Oh, I'm like looking at myself. And it's very clear. Given that's done over, I'm going to say AirPlay, which is, we know, is wireless and whatever.
Wi-Fi and Bluetooth,
Yeah, it is a very clever piece of kit. And I have to say, I want to use it more, you know, because it's just a great idea, especially if you're already, you know, it's better than the camera I've got. I've got a reasonably decent 4K webcam, but that iPhone camera, you know, let's be honest,
looks stunning, doesn't it? Yeah,
that iPhone camera puts it to shame. So there's no, like, you know, it's probably not a bad way to do it. But yeah, I think it's got to be taking some of the tech from that, hasn't it? And the additional pieces of the kind of AI elements of the camera technology. But yeah, definitely, this is coming. You know, this is coming. We are getting closer to it. It will be very interesting to see how close to the mark these rumors are, though, with it.
Yeah, we're going to get some announcements soon, haven't we? Surely.
Got to be.
Yeah.
Well, on that point, then, it's probably a good place for us to wrap up for tonight. We'll be back next week with episode 121 of the Weekly Tech Round and all the latest news to show. Yeah. One of the things we will be back next week to talk about is the release of GoldenEye. Yes. Do you remember GoldenEye? Woo! Yes, you've probably got to be of a certain age, let's be quite honest. First released in 1998. GoldenEye
on Nintendo 64.
Many an hour spent on quad play on somebody's CRTV in their living room, trying not to get killed with the golden gun. Well, this weekend, this Friday, it released on Xbox Cloud Gaming and also on Xbox Game Pass. So available on the...
On the Switch,
yes, thank you very much. So I have been playing it with my kids this week. They are really unimpressed. Well, they like it, but they're also unimpressed by how frustratingly hard it is, because when you're dead, you're dead. And if you are like that and you get the golden gun, if it's one shot, one kill, they are
odd job with the golden gun.
Many a time. But yes, it has hasn't aged well, let's just say, even though it has, you know, lovingly restored, it's you know, 4K upscaling to 4K. I would say, yes, it hasn't aged too great. But we'll be back next week with a full review of how that is actually playing and what you can expect from it, as well as all the rest of the tech news. You can still find us on Twitter at Weekly Tech Rant. We're also online at techrant.online for all of our show notes. And of course, wherever you get your podcasts, we are available on all of the major platforms. And if we're not on any platform you'd like us to be on, do let us know and we will, see if we can get published there.
Yeah.
So with that, I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good evening, all.